Welcome to The Digital Brew,
a podcast about making your business more awesome online.
I'm Angela, a copywriter, here with my husband Stu, a web designer.
It's time to pour yourself a cuppa and let's get started.
Hello and welcome to episode 7 of The Digital Brew. Today we're going to be talking all about designing your website. So yeah, this should be useful whether you plan to DIY, outsource parts of the job, or hire a designer, or if you're just not sure. So this will hopefully help you figure out what you need to do next. So over to Stu, because he's the expert in all things design.
Okay, before you make a start on anything, the first thing you want to do is refer to your brand guidelines. You can check out episode 5 where we did a full walkthrough on our own brand guidelines document. And so you can actually get access to that one. So you want to make sure you fill that out thoroughly. So before you start anything in terms of logo design, web design, anything. So we'll just run through some of the things that you can pull from that document, which will help you to design your new website. So objectives. You need to look at what you plan to achieve with your business and then what part your website is going to play in that. So there's no point in making a website if you don't know what the point of it is. You need to look at what role it's going to be playing in your sales funnel or just your general marketing strategy overall. You need to be looking at your audience as well. So who you're trying to appeal to and what problems do you want to solve for those people, particularly when they come to your website, what are they looking for? So for example, we could look at a chiropractor. Now they'd be appealing to quite a broad range of people. They'd be appealing to families, maybe people who have labor intensive careers who need a lot of adjusting all the time, or retired people. So you'd need general information on that website and you'd need that to be pretty clear and forefront, so stuff about opening times, pricing, the type of chiropractic work they do. You'd probably also want to have something to help reassure people before they come and visit the chiropractor, something like customer success stories, so people can, you know, see that real people have been to the chiropractor and had success. Maybe something to make it more personable, like videos from the chiropractors on their processes and what new people can expect when they go to the chiropractor, and things like that. So also looking at the identity part of the brand guidelines document, so the brand archetype, looking at what type of brand yours is, and it's a good idea to look at similar businesses with the same brand archetype as yours. So you're looking at their own branding, their logo, their colors, their typography, you know, the feel of their website, and how it all pulls together, and that can give you some inspiration going into your new design or redesign. And the look, so your brand colors, typography, any textures that are used throughout the website, any photography that you'll be using, and your logo. So now we're going to be looking at some different options and pathways that you can take, and we'll specifically be looking at different options in terms of your logo, whether you're creating a new one or updating it, your website, whether you're creating a new website or updating it, and which software to use to, you know, bring it all together. So first, we'll have a really quick look at logo.
Yeah, so there's three options for when you want to get a logo done or redone. There's DIY, there's outsourcing, and there's also hiring a professional. We've only done the DIY route so far, haven't we? We've worked with outsourcing a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, but obviously we have some of those design skills in-house, so that's a nice advantage. Mm. But if you're a small business who doesn't have those design skills in-house, it might make sense to get a little bit of help with your logo design.
So we'll quickly run through the options. So there's some pros and cons to each, which we'll run through. So for DIY, the pros are it's cheap, obviously, because you're doing it yourself. It can be fast because, again, you're doing it yourself and you know what you want. The cons list is a lot longer. So what you think you want may not actually be what you need, and the results of it could be quite a poor quality looking logo if you're not a professional logo designer. That's because obviously you don't have the skills, the practice, you may not have the right software.
Don't use Microsoft Paint.
Don't use Microsoft Paint or Microsoft PowerPoint or Microsoft Word.
Or even Canva.
Don't use Canva. I know they rank very highly for logo design, but doesn't mean you should use them to make a logo.
No.
And if you're doing it yourself, You may think you have a good understanding of what you need, but you could actually end up getting the wrong brand feel and tone from the beginning, which is something you want to try and avoid. There are online tools that can help to generate just really simple, like text-based logos or icon-based logos. They're not really unique or tailored, but if you're working on a really tiny or non-existent budget and you just have an MVP, you just need to try something, then it could be a good way to just get your feet off the ground. So second option is outsourcing, so using something like Fiverr, which can really be a hit or miss. There's horror stories, but there's also positive stories. Something like 99designs or Upwork can get you better quality work if you're outsourcing to those kinds of areas. The pricing can fluctuate, so you can go from $5 all the way up to thousands of dollars in these instances, and so can quality, but you can actually walk away with a good product at a good price if you luck out or if you do your research from the beginning. And then the last option is hiring a professional graphic logo branding designer. You could be looking at many hundreds or thousands of dollars if you go this route, but they're going to really get to know you and your brand a lot better. They're going to ask you a lot of questions. They're going to take the time, and they have a lot of experience as well.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about designing your website. So similar to logos, you've got three main options that you can go with. So you can do DIY website, which is where a lot of people start if they have some really basic tech skills. You can hire freelancers, or you can work with an agency. So, Stu, do you want to talk about some of the pros and cons of each of those options?
Okay, so DIY can be a good option if you're just starting out with a tiny budget and you just need to get something online and working for you. Depending on which route you take, whether you want to use, you know, a builder like Squarespace, or if you want more freedom from something like WordPress, it can take a bit of tech know-how to get things up and running, and you'll probably need a bit of a willingness to learn. But if you have those qualities and a can-do attitude, it can be a good place to start. A second option can be hiring a freelancer. So if you do have more of a budget to work with, a freelancer can be a good option. You'll mostly be just dealing with the one person because they are a freelancer, and that way they can actually get to know you and your brand really well. They are a one-person shop, which can make them more affordable because they wear many, many hats. You know, they can be the designer, they can be the developer, the project manager, you know, the marketing expert. It can mean that, you know, some of those skills aren't as honed as others, so the quality can dip in some areas, but it can end up being a bit more affordable. It may require more input from you if you go with a freelancer. You might have to get your hands a bit more dirty, depending on their own processes. Or you may actually need to hire multiple freelancers. So you may need a web designer, and then you may need to hire a developer and an illustrator, and, you know, someone who can do back-end database management. It just depends on your project. So that can essentially make you the project manager, which again requires more input from you, but it can potentially save you money depending on how you go about it. The third option, and the typically more expensive option, is to go with an agency. And when I'm talking agency, I'm talking your classic agency, you know, big building, lots of employees. The good thing about it is they have a whole team under one roof, and they typically have very efficient processes. So they're the ones that are going to have, you know, a team of designers, a team of developers, a team of marketers, all that kind of stuff. So it's probably going to give you a quality end product. And it's probably going to go quite fast too, because they stick to their streamlined processes very strictly. So if you have a big budget and you don't want to, you know, get your hands dirty and have a lot of time taken off you, this can be a good option.
Something we should say as well is with the Digital Brew, we kind of fit a little bit in between the freelancer and agency category. So we're not one or the other. Like, individually, Stu and I are both freelancers, but when we come together, we kind of make like a mini agency.
Yeah.
So it's sort of not agency pricing, but it's a bit more of a streamlined process, and you don't have to do the whole project management role when you're getting your website done, because we sort of manage ourselves. Okay, so let's talk a bit more about the platform that your website can get built on, because there's so many out there, lots of different ways to do it. It can be a bit confusing. And also, if you're faced with a choice of, you know, one platform or the other, it can be a bit overwhelming. So let's talk a bit about that.
Yeah, so that you've got your DIY website builders, so you've probably all heard of them, and they certainly have their space. There's Squarespace, Wix, Weebly, and about a million others. Now, they're fine if you're doing it yourself and if you're just getting started and you need something up and running, but they can be quite limiting on features. So they may not have the most comprehensive SEO features. They may limit you on design. They may have an e-commerce integration, but it may not be very comprehensive. And if you intend on your website growing within, you know, the coming months or years, you may find yourself struggling to get it, you know, try to mold it to do what you want it to do. And you'll probably be wishing you went with something like WordPress, which is more flexible and can grow with you, which leads us into WordPress. Now, WordPress can have quite a learning curve, but as the trade-off, the possibilities are quite huge. It's open source, so you can manipulate it however you want to. It has a really big open source community for support. You don't have to be a coder to manage and maintain the site. You own everything because it's open source. You own everything. You typically host it on your own server. You're not relying on a SaaS company like Squarespace to stay profitable and up and running, to keep your website online. However, there are quite a lot of downsides and really notable downsides. So there is the hosting side of it. If you want cheap hosting, it's going to be a bit finicky for you to set it up and maintain it. But if you want good hosting, it costs a lot. You've got security issues. That's typically in your court because, again, you own and manage everything, so you need to keep on top of security. You have to maintain it, so you have to keep software up to date. There's no real official support lines. You're kind of relying on the community or the support from any plugins or themes you've bought. And you do have to get in and get your hands dirty quite a bit to get everything running together.
So pretty much what you're saying here is that WordPress is great for a lot of people, but it's not always the answer.
Yeah, it's not always. If you have a really, really simple website, you don't have a big budget and you want a minimal viable product, you just need to get something online, then honestly go with a website builder like Squarespace. And then as the company grows, as you've proven your concept and you want to, you know, add more features, it may be time to look at getting a WordPress website done. And that's probably where you would have a bit more money and you're ready to spend money on a freelancer or an agency. So,
and like, what if they have e-commerce? So we talk about Shopify?
Well, Shopify is specifically built for e-commerce and it can be easy to get it up and running, but it can be limiting, just like a Squarespace. It does have freedom to sort of mold and manipulate, but you'd need to get your hands dirty with code in most cases. They do have a plugin library, which is quite large, and they are, I think, more capable of handling larger e-commerce sites. I'd say Shopify would be a better option than going with something like Squarespace for e-commerce, because Squarespace is really limiting, at least last time I checked. WordPress for e-commerce is a bit hit and miss. I don't particularly like it, to be honest. It can be a bit clunky, particularly if your e-commerce site is going to grow. If you're going to get a really large e-commerce site and you know that's going to happen, then WordPress may not be the right option for you. It has struggled and can struggle. So, yeah, Shopify has its place.
What if you just want to sell one or two products, like a really small site?
If you want to sell one or two products and you don't want any frills and you're not the type of person who goes, oh, can it do this and this and this and this and can I add this and make it do this? And you know you're not going to be adding more than one or two products, then something like Squarespace could actually work for you. Or you could go the WordPress route and use a plugin like WooCommerce or another simple plugin like Easy Digital Downloads to sell it, and that should be fine.
Lots of options.
It all depends.
Okay, so if anyone is still following this conversation, I think we better talk about the web design process. So let's look at it from the perspective as the client, but also from the DIY angle for anyone who's looking to hire a freelancer or do it themselves.
So we're breaking this up into two sections, DIY or if you're hiring someone. I can't go into a great massive lot of detail for this, otherwise we'd be here all day, but I also don't want to skip over heaps of details. I kind of want to give you an idea of what you're in for if you decide to DIY it on WordPress. So if you're just getting started, you'll need to purchase a domain. Now there are a million different domain providers out there, so you'll want to make sure that they provide a few things. You'll probably want a DNS management. Some of them don't provide that, or they ask for an additional fee for DNS management. Typically, you want a provider that provides that for free. You want free or really cheap Whois ID protection. So this is just this thing that you can't get it for .au domains, but for .com domains and a lot of other domains, it hides your contact details if someone looks up a domain. You want to check their renewal pricing. A lot of companies, GoDaddy is guilty of this, make it seem like the domain is going to renew for a cheaper price, but the renewal price is generally significantly more. So,
oh, and watch out for those letters you get in the mail after you register a business name. You'll get them from these companies that are offering you domains for like $99 a year or something.
Yeah, for only $200, you can secure your domain. So
it looks like a government letter or something, but it's not.
It's very sneaky.
Make sure you don't sign up with them. Do your research and find something for a good price.
Yeah. You'll need to decide on hosting if it's a WordPress website. Now, I would advise to avoid shared hosting. So this is typically cPanel hosting, and look at managed WordPress hosts like Kinsta or WP Engine. They can be a bit expensive. So you're looking at a starting price of around $30 or $40 for a lot of them. But you get really good support and they're geared 100% at WordPress. Or if you want it a bit cheaper and you're okay with getting your hands a little bit dirty, and you want a bit more control, you could look at a managed cloud solution like Cloudways. So when you start developing your website, you have two choices. You can do it locally, which means on your computer, so it's not live on the internet, or you could do it on a staging domain on the internet. So a lot of these managed WordPress hosts will actually provide you with staging URLs, so you can develop online. It's good if you want to get feedback from people as you go. You can send them the link and they can look at it. Or if you want to do it locally, so everything stays on your computer, you can use a piece of software like Local by Flywheel, and that allows you to basically run a website on your computer. You will need to migrate it, though, when you're ready to go live, which can be a tricky process. I would suggest setting up an SSL certificate from the very start, so you don't have to, tack it on at the end, and then you run into a bunch of issues with redirects and blah, blah, blah. It's a pain in the butt.
And what's an SSL certificate?
So it's when you go to a website, you'll typically see HTTPS at the beginning of the URL, sometimes a little padlock, sometimes it's green, depending on which browser you use, and it just encrypts all data that gets sent through your website into a bunch of code that no one can read. So
it's a security thing.
It's a security thing, but it's also a ranking factor. Google, looks at it as a ranking factor, and they even, warn you sometimes now if a website isn't secure, don't go to this website, it's not secure.
That's a new thing, isn't it?
Yeah, last year or so. Yeah. And it's just responsible. You should just always have – data should always be encrypted. And, for example, our gas company, it frustrates me. Their website doesn't have an SSL certificate. And every time we need a new bottle of gas, I have to submit this form with my address and all this stuff, and it's getting sent unencrypted. And that's not nice.
Not ideal.
You don't do that to your customers.
Yeah.
So when you've got a fresh install of WordPress, you'll want to make sure it's set up, the settings of it are set up properly from the start, so you're not realizing you've made a mistake. So make sure your website title and the subtitle is set up. The HTTPS URL is correct in the back end. Look through the comment settings, whether you want to turn them on or off, or, there's a whole bunch of options in there. Just look through them all. Set your permalinks from the start. So most people will set them to post name. There's an option for your media uploads folders, whether you want all your media, like images and stuff like that, to be dumped in one folder or separated into month folders. I typically like to dump them all in one folder because it gets messy with a whole bunch of month-based folders in there. If you're developing live on a live server, you probably want to make your website undiscoverable under reading settings so that Google and places don't crawl your website while you're working on it.
So that could mean that it starts showing up in Google search results and you don't want people to see your site before it's ready. Okay.
That doesn't mean Google will obey that command, but you can ask it politely. Please do not crawl this website. Remove the default plugins that WordPress comes with, typically Akismet and Hello Dolly. Get rid of those. Get rid of all your themes except the latest one, probably 2019 or 2020, whenever you're listening to this. And then you want to install your own theme. I suggest GeneratePress or Astra. These are two good, solid themes with good support, typically. And what's good about these ones is they work really well with page builders, which if you're doing it by yourself, you'll probably be using. And they have pre-built sites that you can import. So it's a really good starting point. You can click a button, it imports a fully made website, and then all you have to do is change words and images, and you're good to go. You want to install your plugins. So I'll run through some of the plugins that you'll probably want to think of. So a page builder, probably something like Elementor, Beaver Builder, Breezy, Divi. A contact form plugin if it's not included in your page builder or another plugin that you're using. An SEO plugin. Yoast is the most popular. I don't like it. I think it's ugly and hard to use. The other ones are Rank Math or SEO Press. Safe SVG if your illustrator, graphic designer person is sending you all these beautiful SVGs to put on your website. Install this plugin. It enables SVG use and it also sanitizes them, so it reduces your security risks because you can get hacked through SVG images. Sounds crazy, I know, but they're just code.
I did not know that.
Duplicate post. So if you've, say, made a services page and you want to duplicate it and just change a few things for a different service, this plugin's good for stuff like that. Really simple SSL. If you don't know much about SSL, it kind of makes sure that your SSL works without doing much. You just basically have to press a button. If your page builder doesn't come with a coming soon feature, then get a coming soon plugin. I can't recommend one because I don't use them, but I'm sure there's plenty of good ones out there. An SMTP plugin. So instead of using the default mailing service that may come with your host, I would suggest installing an SMTP plugin and then configuring it with your own email address. And what this means is any mail that gets sent through your website, whether it's from a contact form or whether it's the email that gets sent to you when you've forgotten your password, those emails get sent through your own email address. And it increases the deliverability. And so you don't want contact form submissions lost in the ether. You want to make sure they're actually coming to your inbox. So the two popular ones are WPML SMTP and Postman SMTP, I think. Security, you probably want a security plugin, even if it's just a light one. You don't have to get WordFence. Maybe even just something like iThemes security, which just adds a bit more hardening to security. And in terms of security, just common sense, you know, make sure your password isn't password, keep your plugins and your themes up to date and WordPress up to date, and you should be fine. A caching plugin, now your hosting provider may come with one. If you want a good paid one, there's one called WP Rocket. If you want a decent free one, there's one by Cloudways called Breeze, and there's one by Automatic, which is the team that makes WordPress, called WP Supercache. And a backup plugin. Even when you're just making your website, you're developing it, still put a backup plugin there and do daily backups so that if your computer fries or the server fries, you have a backup somewhere on like Dropbox and you can always restore it. Now, before you get designing, I know it's really tempting once you install WordPress to just start making stuff, to start adding content, but it's best to get all the annoying, boring stuff out of the way first. So you need to add your brand styles into the customizer, or if you're using a page builder to customize it, then the page builder. This is where you'll add your typography, so the fonts you're using, the different sizes for the different headings and the body text and the lists, you know, stuff like line height and paragraph spacing. Colors, so you'll probably add your brand colors here, so colors for links or headings, stuff like that. Spacing for divs and different layouts, so you're looking at sidebars and blog layouts and stuff like that. Get all of that set up from the very beginning. Your page builder or the theme that you're using will have documentation on how to do all that typically. And now you can sort of get in and start building the website. I suggest building out the header and footer first. Now, if you've installed one like a pre-made website, as I mentioned, from GeneratePress or Astra, then you can just go in and sort of tweak the ones that they come with. Or if you want to start on a blank slate, you can do that too. You can either do it via the theme that you're using, or if you're using like Elementor Pro or something like Beaver Builder with Beaver Themer or something like Divi, they actually come with the features to be able to visually, so with no code, build out your headers and your footers. And then once your headers and footers are built out, you can start looking at your archive pages, so your blog pages. You can edit how they look in your theme customizer settings typically. And then you want to look at your single post pages. So if you have a blog, this is where an individual single blog post, you want to change how that looks, how the text looks, maybe the comment section looks. Again, you can do that in your themes customizer settings. Or again, if you're using a page builder to do these things, you can do it all visually. And then you can start building out all your pages. So your about page, your services page, your contact page, and stuff like that. So once you've built out your website, you probably want to start integrating external services. So if you're using email marketing for, you know, newsletter signups, integrating those, setting up your redirects. So if you're doing a redesign, you typically want to keep the URL structure the same. But, you know, if you're removing old pages that weren't getting used anymore, they're probably still indexed in Google, or maybe someone's linked to them on social media. So make sure you set up a redirect to an existing page on your new website. If you're using Rank Math, the SEO plugin, it comes with this feature, which is pretty awesome. Or you can use, there's another plugin in WordPress called Redirections. Get your SEO set up. So make sure your titles, your meta descriptions, you got your keywords figured out and in your content. Get your favicon. How do you pronounce that?
I just say favicon, like favorite.
Yeah, because it's
favorite thing. Icon.
Yeah.
Whoa, I never realized it was a favorite icon.
Anyway, get that up, set up. And just whichever SEO plugin you're using, just go through those settings with the fine tooth comb and make sure you got everything set up right. The biggest tip I can give is make sure that your sitemap. Go to the sitemap settings and make sure you're indexing only what you want to index. You won't want to index your tags. Turn off tags.
Does that make a bit of a mess if you don't?
Well, if you have a bunch of tags, then it's you've just got all these tag categories indexed, so which is duplicate content, and your sitemap is just this huge because it's full of 50 million tags and they're all getting indexed. It's just a mess. Just turn off tags.
Okay.
It can negatively impact your SEO. So before you go live, go through your pre-launch checklist. What's that? I don't have a pre-launch checklist. I'll add one in the show notes. Yay.
You're such a good guy.
So I'll add the pre-launch checklist that I use. It's just a bunch of checkboxes. You can go through and make sure you've done everything right before you launch. When you're ready to launch, if you did it locally, built your website locally on your computer, you'll need to migrate it to your live website. If you did it live, then you may not have to do much. You might just have to migrate it from your staging site to your live site, and then you'll update your DNS records to launch the website. And then you'll want to go through your post-launch checklist. Again, I'll add a link or in the show notes or on our website, the post-launch checklist that I use. So once everything's up and live, you can go through and check all the boxes and make yourself feel good. Some of the things in there are quite important. So you want to make sure your SSL is working and check for unsecured content. So if you go to a page in your website and it says it's HTTPS, but it's kind of got like a little cross through it, that's typically because there's maybe an image somewhere on the page, which it could be an external linking externally to HTTP, and you just need to change that to HTTPS. So there's a little tool, which I'll link to in the show notes, that's good for that.
That's what happened the other day or a few months ago when it was Giphy, wasn't it?
Giphy?
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think so. It happens quite often. Yeah. You need to keep an eye on it.
Interesting.
Because it's not the worst thing in the world, but you don't want Google Chrome telling your website visitors that this page is not secure. Just because there's one link on there that's not leading to a secure location. Make sure all the redirects that you set up are working properly so that people visiting your old links that don't exist are still getting sent to your new website. And make sure that your SSL redirects are set up correctly too. I'll add a link to a cool tool which does this. What's it called? Redirect Mapper. It's like varvi.com/tool/redirects. I'll add a link in the show notes. And that'll just make sure that your like www and non-www and HTTP and non-HTTP are all redirecting to the same place. Make sure your Google Analytics and Google Search Console are set up and linked. And then test the speed of your website and optimize it. So run it through something like GT Metrics or Google Page Insights. It'll pump out a whole bunch of things that are wrong with your website. Don't get too scared as long as your website's not loading in 15 seconds. But just your basic things like making sure your image is the right size. You haven't got a giant image squished down to a tiny size on your website. Just simple things like that.
Speed testing is pretty much Stu's favorite part about launching a website.
No, it's not. It's not my favorite part.
You do it a lot.
I just stress about it. That's all.
You stress if it's not like 2 seconds.
Yes. And so you should.
Oh, dear.
So after everything's up and live and good and going, you want to maintain your website. So this includes updating your software, updating your themes, running regular backups, doing security scans for malware, checking for bugs and fixing the bugs if you update a piece of software and it breaks something, checking for broken links and fixing them, and all those fun things. And that's the DIY section, which was quite large. So that even kind of gives you an idea of what, if you hire someone, what they're going through, what they're doing.
I mean, that was pretty much the process that you went through recently with launching our website.
Yeah. This, again, that wasn't very granular, but I didn't leave out too much, you know, I want to give you an idea of what it's like if you decide to go down that route yourself.
That's why you can't turn around a website in 1 week.
Yeah. And if someone says they can, well, something's not right. It depends. Okay, so now I'm going to run through probably what you're going to see if you decide to hire an agency or a freelancer or something to do your website. So most of the stuff we just went through, all the nitty-gritty stuff, will be hidden from you, and they'll just, you know, get you involved where they need to. So they'll probably give you one or two briefing surveys and maybe a few more meetings in between just to really get to know you and your brand and what you want your website to do, you know, what your pain points are, where you're struggling, you know, things like that, so they can get an idea of the type of website they need to build for you.
And with a briefing survey, we should probably make that really clear. It is epic. The one that we have,
it's huge.
It could take you hours to fill out. So there is a lot of work involved in that, but it's all up front. And from there, you can sort of hand it over to your web designer. And then you just have to give feedback. So it's a lot easier than all those other things that you would have had to do if you were DIYing, at least.
Yeah, maybe if you try DIYing and give up, the briefing survey won't seem so painful.
Like a walk in the park. Yep.
You'll send them your brand guidelines document and any assets. So good idea to make sure that's all filled out really well and correctly. And you'll be sending them your assets, so your logo, hopefully your source files and any images you want used on the website. If they're not doing the content, the copywriting and stuff for your website, you'll need to send that through to them if you're using an external copywriter or if you're writing it yourself. So once they've got all that, they've got all the content and everything they need and they've got a good idea of what's needed from you, they'll probably send you a mock-up or a wireframe to give you an idea on the layout and the functionality of your website. This could just be the homepage or it could be almost your entire site. So it may just be images like a mock-up, or it could actually be like a black and white live thing that you can click through and get an idea of the final product. So once you've signed off on all that, the layout and the functionality, they'll probably send you a high fidelity mock-up or an actual designed functional page of the website, or maybe even more pages. This is so that you can get an idea of the design. So this will be an actual design, like what it's kind of going to look like towards the end. And this is where you'll give feedback on that design so they know they're on the right track before they go and spend all their time building out the rest of your website. So from here, they'll keep you updated on the progress and the design of the remaining pages and the functionality. Hopefully they send you an email once or twice a week saying, hey, we're just working on this at the moment, and they'll ask you for any input they need. And when the website is complete, they'll deliver a first draft for feedback and revisions. So it'll vary depending on the designer, how many revisions and lots of feedback you can give. So ideally, don't just send a whole bunch of emails. Try and collate all your feedback into one email, or if they're using a feedback system, into one thing, so that they can tackle it in one big hit. It'll make for a happier you and a happier web designer.
And, you know, a lot of web designers, like we do, we include a limited number of revisions just to manage the scope. And so if you do it all in one big chunk, then it means you're only using up one round of revisions and there's lots more space for additional revisions as well.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of scope, if you decide you want extra features outside of the initial scope of the project, they may be willing to do it for an additional fee, and sort of cramming it in before launch. Or if what you're asking for is like quite large and would take quite a bit of time, you may have to wait until after the launch, just depending on, I guess, the timeline and the launch date of whether they can fit it in. So it may just be after you launch, it'll be quoted as a separate project on top of that.
Consider it phase two.
Yeah, phase two. Then you'll be going through any additional feedback and bug fixes. Then they'll organize the launch for your website and hopefully give you a nice handover document which has all the information to do with what they've done. And then from there, there'll probably be ongoing maintenance if it's a WordPress website, and it'll be up to you typically, or It'll be outlined from the start whether you'll be using their services to maintain your website or if you want to try and go it alone.
We might do another podcast about website maintenance in the future, I think.
I think we will.
That could be interesting.
That'll be a good one.
There's a lot of stuff I didn't know that I've only found out recently. So fascinating stuff. Okay, I think it might be time to wrap this baby up. So what have we talked about today?
So brand guidelines template. Don't do anything until you've got that figured out. So make sure you've got a really good idea of your brand before you even get started on thinking about your website or design or anything like that. Research other brands of the same archetype as yours to get an idea of their personality and their feel and their design on their website, which can sort of give you some ideas on how you can tackle yours.
Yeah, it means you're never starting from scratch, really.
Yeah. So have a look at all your options, whether you want to do it yourself or whether you want to look at hiring a freelancer or an agency, and just work out what best fits your current needs and your budget. And also looking at using a website builder, something like Squarespace versus using WordPress. Think ahead at what you might need in the next months or years and decide based on that so you can avoid headaches in the future.
And if you're DIYing, prepare to do a lot of Googling and just be really willing to learn. There's a lot to learn about websites. Even like I learned a lot from the podcast today from what Stu has shared because I'm not really in that side of the business. I'm more focused on the marketing and the copywriting side. So there's a lot you need to absorb if you're going to do it yourself.
Yeah, there'll be many hair pulling nights, but if you love learning things and you know that thrill of figuring out how to fix a problem, then you could find it quite fun. If you're using a freelancer or agency, make sure you have a good understanding of your brand and what you need to get the most out of it so that you can actually get the most out of the freelancer and the agency. And hopefully they'll be able to get that out of you, but it's also good to get your head around it before you engage someone.
Okay, that's it, I think, isn't it? So we'll catch you in the next episode, which is going to be all about some very exciting stuff, admin, accounting, and legal stuff for new businesses. So thanks for listening. We'll see you there.
Bye. Thanks for listening to The Digital Brew with Ange and Stu.
Make sure you head over to thedigitalbrew.com for more episodes, detailed show notes, resources, and our newsletter.
And if you feel like this episode has helped you make your business more awesome, pop us a review.
We'll catch you next time.